You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Kia tau te rangi marie, o rangi nui e tui honei, o papu tuanuku e takatonei, o te tai ao e awhinei I a tātou, tihei mauri ora. This is The Green Desk on 95BFM.
And predator-free New Zealand was announced as a conservation plan in July of 2016, and the policy has the ambitious goal of exterminating all stoats, possums and rats from New Zealand by 2050. According to some ecologists, this policy is not only impossible, but also counterproductive for conservation goals. Critics argue that the policy is technically and financially flawed, socially unaware, ecologically unscientific and ethically irresponsible. So to explore some of these criticisms, Alice spoke with Wayne Linklater, Associate Professor at Victoria University.
I think the most compelling reason why predator-free 2050 is the wrong way to approach biodiversity conservation in New Zealand is because we could actually recover, not just protect, but also recover New Zealand's biodiversity faster using other policies or a suite of other policies that are better integrated. So I'll make an outrageous prediction at this point. I think that if we used existing tools better, but also in the ways that we've already been using them, we could probably begin to recover New Zealand's biodiversity within 10 to 15 years. Mm. And that's a much better outcome than predator-free 2050 offering.
What are the existing technologies that you're talking about?
Well, it's not just existing technologies. It's mainly existing approaches that are helped by those technologies. So let's make the observation first that there's an extraordinary sanctuaries movement in New Zealand. Communities are getting together to restore habitat. Sometimes that restored habitat requires putting fences around places. Some of those fences are there to protect forests, shrublands from particular browsers or grazers, so they're simple stock fences. In other places, they're more elaborate fences to protect those places from the small predators that Predator-Free 2050 is concerned about. But there are over 100 of those sanctuaries across New Zealand, and they're just generated by community groups. So there's this enormous groundswell of activity or sanctuaries movement in New Zealand. Now, that sanctuaries movement currently is not particularly well resourced and it's not particularly well coordinated across the country. And so there's this remarkable opportunity for New Zealand's regional and national government to better fund, resource and coordinate, provide some greater guidance to that sanctuaries movement and in fact expand it. What I recommend that regional councils and the Department of Conservation be doing at this point is not just better resourcing and supporting those community efforts, but then providing the mega sanctuaries to fill the gaps. And if we do that, we could generate what we call in ecological science meta populations of recovering biodiversity around the country. And the reason why that's superior to a predator-free focus is that if you have all these sanctuaries that are connected by habitat with each other and there's dispersal amongst them, the whole system's more ecologically robust. If you get another invasion in one part of the country or a whole new pest or a disease or something like that, then those you have all your biodiversity eggs, so to speak, in many, many baskets. Whereas the predator-free policy, to achieve what it wants to achieve, it has to be certain to eradicate predators from the entire country, which is a very high-risk strategy, and it's likely to fail.
I think people don't really understand the difference between predator eradication and biodiversity protection, but can you explain a little bit why there's a difference?
There's a big difference because Predator-Free 2050 assumes that biodiversity throughout the country, that the threats to biodiversity throughout the country are uniformly and dominated by predators. But that's not true. In some parts of the country, we would achieve more biodiversity outcomes by protecting the fauna from browsers or grazers, for instance. In other parts of the country, what we need to do is restore habitat. Let me give you an example. Wellington's a city with lots and lots of forest patches in it because of the topography, right? You can't build on those steep slopes, so they're full of trees and regenerating shrublands. Christchurch, on the other hand, being a city built in a swamp on a flat plain, is almost devoid of habitat. So if you're living in Christchurch, the number one best thing that you can do is not to kill rats in your backyard, but to plant some trees. Whereas in Wellington, it may actually be the case that trapping rats in your backyard is the best thing that you can do. Whether or not you control predators depends upon what your threat is. It depends on where you are in the country. And a nationwide predator eradication policy doesn't appreciate that nuance. And so we end up spending an enormous amount of resources trying to kill predators in places where they're not important to kill.
What was the justification for the policy? Were, was there scientific evidence that was used to justify this?
There's lots of good evidence that predators suppress populations and our biodiversity, no doubt about it, especially reptiles and birds, right? Most of that work, however, is carried out in places in New Zealand's wildlands. It's not necessarily the case that predators are the main problem in places that are dominated by people, human landscapes like farms or cities, which actually make up, you know, two-thirds of New Zealand's landscape. And there's the rub, really, because if you want to have a greater impact on biodiversity, you need to be dealing with big areas. So the greater opportunity here in New Zealand to improve, to recover biodiversity isn't to work with small pockets of wildlands. It's to work with the large landscapes that are human occupied. So we should probably be focusing more on creating agricultural landscapes that are more biodiversity friendly and cityscapes that are more biodiversity friendly. That's where the greater impact lies.
Yeah, I often say that humans are the ultimate invasive species. And also, the policy only targets a few species and leaves out quite a few other species. What is the logic of that, and what are some of the consequences of not including those?
I think the logic is probably a political pragmatism more than anything. Mm. That is, there's a perception that people are less likely to object to possums and rats and stoats being killed. But of course, they might object to a policy to eradicate cats from New Zealand. So that would be a policy too far for the politicians. Mm. And so I think it's a political pragmatism. The problem with species selective policy is that, of course, ecological food webs are complex. And if you remove particular predators from those landscapes, other predators will move in to take their place, or some of their prey might erupt. So, for example, if you remove rats from a landscape, mice erupt. And that's because rats are both predators and competitors with mice. So a simple policy like Predator-Free 2050 doesn't engage with that complexity. It assumes and pretends that that's not the case when we know it isn't. We need a sort of a strategy that doesn't just have a perhaps reduced and more nuanced predator control policy, but also a policy that deals with these other problems that are likely to emerge.
Within the conservation community here, are there a lot of people who agree with this position, or do you receive pushback about this?
You mean criticism of the Predator-Free 2050 policy?
Yes.
I don't know that I receive a lot of pushback. It's important to understand that Predator-Free 2050 was probably a political strategy by the last national government to try and divide the partisan Green vote. So the National Party oversaw, during its tenure, ongoing declines in the quality and quantity of Indigenous habitat in New Zealand. And they were going into an election where the most likely scenario was a Labor-Green alliance. Now, the way to diffuse the Green vote is to come up with an environmental policy that attracts a great deal of attention and support. And you'll note that when they announced the Predator-Free 2050 policy, the other political parties were unable to mount a strong argument against it. And so I think it diffused the Green vote against National. So it was what I would describe as a Machiavellian strategy, a very cunning strategy by the National government. In that political context, you realise that Predator-Free 2050 is primarily a flag-waving exercise. It's not a science-informed policy. It's not a strategy that's informed by what we know about, the total sum of what we know about the ecology of New Zealand's habitat and landscapes and what's required to protect and to grow their biodiversity.
Can you talk a little bit about poisons and genetic modification as suggested solutions?
Well, let's talk about poisons for a moment. And of course, you can't avoid talking about 1080 when you talk about poisons in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Some surveying by a University of Auckland lecturer, Dr. James Russell, published in the Royal Society Journal in 2014, I think, explained some surveying where 40% of New Zealanders said they were unhappy with the use of 1080 poisons. And that's a lot of New Zealanders. And that's perfectly understandable. Poisons are nasty and cruel. Predator-free 2050 will require that we use more poisons and that they will have to be distributed in people's backyards. Without offering my own opinion about the use of 1080 and other poisons to control pests, it is clearly a major barrier to success that people oppose the use of poisons in their backyards for a whole suite of reasons, their safety or the ethics and their cruelty. So it's not very realistic to propose eradicating these mammals from the entirety of New Zealand when it's going to require more poison use. And this is why, of course, many conservationists are claiming that they're going to have to move to things like gene editing and gene drive to try and solve the problem, because those might be more acceptable. But the problem with those things is they're not necessarily more acceptable. There's a strong anti-genetic modification movement in New Zealand for legitimate reasons. And not only that, but the technology to do it in animals like rats is still a very long way off. So again, you know, you've got a policy which proposes eradicating mammals from the whole of New Zealand without the tools, the technologies, or the social license, as they call it, the community support to do it. What it's going to do, if they run this through to its logical conclusion, is what it's going to do is further divide New Zealanders. And that's not a good place for conservation to be.
At this point, how difficult would it be to change this policy?
Oh, it'd be easy. Just drop it. Defund the company that was formed to do it and allocate those funding to the approaches we have now and a better integrated biodiversity protection recovery plan for the whole nation. I think the current focus by conservationists in New Zealand on invasive species is a type of conservation extremism that we have to move away from. And we move away from it by engaging with all the values that New Zealanders want in their landscapes.
That was The Green Desk on 95 BFM. Tihei Mauri ora.
That was a 95 BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.